Chapter 2, Mark 12.53.09. Erebus stands, surrounded by demon kind. He is still high in the north on the now accursed Satric Plateau. The sky is blood red, the colour of his legion's armour. The horizon is a ring of fire. The earth is a cinder heap. The black stones marking out the ritual circle, the stones taken from the grave world of Istvan V, throb with an incandescent power. A wind howls. In its plangent notes, like voices chanting, is the truth. The primordial truth. The truth of Lorgar. The truth of the words they bear. The surviving Zenvar Kaul have long since retreated to a safe distance, some 15 kilometres away down the valley. Only the Gal Vorbach warriors remain, led by Zote, their obdurate forms proof against the lethal wind and the unnatural fire. Erebus is tired, but he's also elated. It is almost time for the second sunrise, the second greater Ushkul II. He signals to assemble Zote. Around Erebus on the charred slopes and blackened rocks, the demons slither and chatter, disturbed by his movement. They are basking in the luciferous glow, glistening, glinting, churring, some sluggish, others eager to be loosed. He calms them with soft words. Their forms stretch out around him as far as he can see, like a colony of pinnipeds basking on a blasted shore. They loop around one another, bodies entwined, embraced, conjoined. They writhe and whine, yelp and murmur, raising their heads to utter their unworldly cries into the dying sky. Fat blowflies buzz, blackening the filthy air. Horns and crests sway in ghastly rhythm. Bat wings spread and flutter. Segmented legs stir and rattle. Erebus sings to them. He knows their names. Algolath, Sergotha, Etelelid, Mubonicus, Balkara, Uun, Jarabael, Phaedrobael, Nkari, Epidemius, Seth Ash, who aspects change, Ormanus, Tarik Reborn, he who is now Tormageddon, Laceratus, Proteal, Galgoth, Asmode, 100,000 more. Samus has just returned, dipping into the circle to clothe himself in new flesh. There is still some fight left in the enemy, then, for the likes of Samus to be turned back. It will not be enough. It will not overcome what is descending. Reality is caving in. Erebus can hear it creaking and ripping as it buckles. Kalth can only stand so much stress. Then ruin will break, like a storm. Zote carries over the warp flask. Erebus tunes it to link with Zetsun Verid Yard, with Kor Faeron. Erebus realizes he is bleeding from the mouth. He wipes the blood away.
Begin, he says.
Mark 12.59.45. Sorachure watches Kor Faeron's face as he receives the message from the surface. There is glee. The time is at hand. The bulk coordinates are already set. At a simple nod from Kor Faeron, Chure instructs the Magi at their control consoles. The entire planetary weapons grid is retrained on a single new target. Kor Faeron's eagerness is evident. He has played with the grid, annihilating battleships, orbitals and moons, but quickly wearied of the sport. A pure purpose awaits. The word-bearers effect a communion with the stars. The sons of the heavens hold deep meaning for them. The strata of their legion's organization are named after solar symbols. Through superhuman effort, Erebus and Kor Faeron have transformed the entire planet of Kalth into a solar temple, an altar on which to make their final tribute. Erebus has worn the skin of reality thin and opened the membrane enclosing the immaterium. The altar is anointed. Kor Faeron steps forward and places his left hand upon the master control. He presses it. The weapons grid begins to fire, concentrated and coherent energy, shoals of missiles, destructive beams, warheads of antimatter sheathed in heavy metals. The rays and beams will take almost 8 minutes to reach their target. The hard projectiles will take considerably longer. But they will all hit in turn and continue to strike again and again and again as the merciless bombardment continues. The target is the blue-white star of the Viridian system. Cor Pharaon begins to murder the sun. Mark 13.10.05.
"We feared you had perished," says Marius Gage.
Gilliman has just walked into the auxiliary bridge of the McCrag's Honour with his battered kill squad escort.
"What does not kill me," replies Gilliman, "is not trying hard enough."
He makes them smile. He's good at that. But they can all read the change in him. He was never a man you could warm to. He was too hard, too driven, too austere. Now he is wounded, wounded like an animal might be wounded, wounded in a way that makes that animal dangerous.
"Voided without a helm," Gilliman says. "Primarch biology helped, but the atmospheric envelope was my true savior."
"What?" Gage begins.
"What was that thing?"
Gilliman finishes. Everyone is staring, everyone listening.
"Should this be a conversation we finish in private?" asks Gage.
Gilliman shakes his head.
"As I understand it from Thiel," he says, gesturing to the sergeant at his side, "you have all spent hours fighting your way through this ship against other fiends like it. It has cost you. I can see it has cost you, Marius."
Gage is suddenly painfully aware of his truncated arm.
"I can't see any point in hiding the truth from anybody here," says Gilliman. "You have all served Ultramar today with more than duty might have reason to expect, and the day is not done. It seems unlikely that we will win anything or even survive, but I would dearly like to wound our treacherous foe before we die."
The Primarch looks around the room. His armor is sheened and sticky with filth. His face is dirty, and there is blood in his hair.
"Let us share what we know and build some strategy. I welcome theoreticals from anybody at this stage. Anything will be considered."
He walks over to the strategium.
"We can use the word demon, I think. A warp entity manifested and destroyed the bridge. You have fought others. Demon is as good a word as any. It was Lorgar, or at least..."
He pauses and looks back at them.
"I don't know where Lorgar is. I don't know if my brother was ever in this system in the flesh. But it was his voice and his presence that visited me, and it was him that transformed. It was no trick. Lorgar and his legion have consorted with the powers of the warp. They have forged an unholy covenant. It has twisted them. It has started a war."
Gilliman sighs.
"I don't know how to fight them. I know how to fight most things. I can even work out how to fight warriors of the Legiones Astartes, though the notion seems heretical. Like Thiel here, I can think the unthinkable and make theoreticals out of the blasphemous. But demons, it seems to me, with the Council of Nicaea, that we voluntarily rid ourselves of the one weapon we might have had against the warp. We could dearly use the Librarius now."
His warriors nod in silent agreement.
"We should petition for their reinstatement," he adds, "if we ever get the chance. We cannot do it now. There is no time, no means. But if any of us survive this, know that the edict must be overturned."
He pauses, thoughtful.
"It is almost as though," he muses, "someone knew. Nicaea disarmed us. It is as though our enemy knew what was coming and orchestrated events so that we would voluntarily cast aside our only practical weapon the moment before it was needed."
There is a murmur of quiet dismay.
"We are all being used,"
Gilliman says, lifting his eyes and looking at Gage.
"All of us, even Lorgar. When he tried to kill me, to rip me into space, I could feel the pain in him. I have never been close to him, but there is a fraternal link. I could feel his horror, his agony at the way fate had twisted on us all.
"He said Horus," Gage begins.
"I know what he said," replies Gilliman.
"He said others were already dead, at Istvan," Gage presses. "Manus, Vulcan, Korax."
"If that is true," says Empion, "it is a tragedy beyond belief."
"Three sons, three Primarchs, the loss is appalling," agrees Gilliman. "Four, if you count Lorgar, five, if what he says of Horus is true. And others," he said, "had turned."
Gilliman takes a deep breath.
"Korax and Vulcan, I will mourn dearly. Manus, I will miss most of all."
Gage knows what his Primarch means. In all tactical simulations, Gilliman shows particular favor for certain of his brothers. He refers to them as the dauntless few, the ones he can most truly depend upon to do what they were made to do. Dorn and his legion are one. Ill-tempered, argumentative Russ is another. Sanguinius is a third. Gilliman admires the Khan greatly, but the white scars are neither predictable nor trustworthy. Ferus Manus and the Iron Hands were always the fourth of the dauntless few. With any one of those key four, Dorn, Russ, Manus, or Sanguinius, Gilliman always claimed he could win any war, outright, against any foe. Even in extremis, the Ultramarines could compact with any one of those four allies and take down any foe. It was primary theoretical. In any doomsday scenario that faced the Imperium, Gilliman could play it out to a practical win, provided he could rely on one of those four. And of them, Manus was the key. Implacable, unshakable. If he was at your side, he would never break. Now it seems he is gone. Gone. Dead. Brother, friend, warrior, leader. Ultramar's most stalwart ally. Gilliman breaks the bleak silence.
"Show me tactical. The near-space combat. Someone said there was a vox from the surface, finally."
"From Leptius Numinus, Lord," says the master of vox.
"Who was it?"
"Captain Ventanus," says Gage. "We had a good signal for a while and were getting a vital data feed, but the vox cut off suddenly about an hour ago. A violent interrupt."
"I don't need to ask if you're trying to re-establish the link," says Gilliman.
"You do not, Lord,"
replies the master of vox. Gilliman turns to Empion.
"Assemble all the strengths we have aboard this ship. Kill squads. Every heavy weapon we can find. Forget chapter and company lines. Just divide and group the men we have into viable fighting parties. Have the squad leaders mark their helms in red."
"Red, sir?"
asks Empion.
"We do not have reliable vox, Claude. So I want firm and simple visual cues for the chain of command."
Gilliman looks across at Thiel.
"Besides," he says, "I think after Thiel's efforts today, it's high time that stopped being a mark of censure."
"Yes, sir," says Empion.
"My lord," Shipmaster Homet calls out.
"What is it?"
"The weapons grid, my lord. It's firing."
"At whom?"
"At the sun,"